speaking on the issues that impact. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to another day on the Johnny Vedmore Show. Thanks for joining me again, and thanks to everyone. I already see there's loads of people in the chat, and I'd really like to hear your questions and comments throughout the show. As you know, I always keep my eye on the chat, make sure that you tell me exactly what you want to know, and I'll see if I can find it out off my guest today. And I got a few guests today, so I promise you that to start off some episodes on the Johnny Vedmore Show, I've decided to bring you details of people and events, some that still termed as conspiratorial, but which have been proven without a shadow of a doubt as fact. I'll be borrowing from my own work, as I've said this week, and I aim to give you the tools and information which will allow you to bring context to any debate you're having on these subjects. The important part is, of course, knowledge. We must have knowledge and we must have facts if we are to be able to beat down the many accusations of being conspiracy theorists or the like. So today, I'll start off with an extract from an article on the rise of the internet and that of Jeff Bezos, which was published in UK Column in September 2022. From the World Wide Web, the World Wide Web, there was no Amazon, no Google, CNET, or eBay. While the vast majority of humans had no idea that the internet was going to become so all-encompassing, one large financial organization began, like nothing which had been before, to capitalize on its foreknowledge of the coming internet era. Even when the internet revolution had begun, most people didn't understand how these slow-loading web pages, limited in their functionality, could possibly end up having such a comprehensive impact on every part of modern society. As the technologies which made the modern cyber realm possible took shape, there was a selection of powerful hedge funds and financial institutions which had begun to calculate the winners and losers of this newly formed technological era. One of the biggest of these players was a futuristic and one-of-a-kind financial institution, originally set up by a man named David E. Shaw, PhD. This major mover and shaker of the internet revolution has remained relatively unknown to many people who use the web today, and the extraction of Shaw from the annals of history is assuredly purposeful. D.E. Shaw & Co. was more than just a hedge fund founded by a former professor. It was the company that co-opted the internet revolution and that began creating some of the giant monopolies which still dominate the online realm today. To understand the coordinated capitalization, manipulation, and monopolization that has characterized the digital world in our generation, we have to go back to the time before the majority of us knew about the coming internet age. In doing so, we soon discover that the standard account of Jeff Bezos and the hype surrounding the creation of Amazon is just another fabricated story which falls apart under closer inspection. Bezos had studied electrical engineering and computer sciences at New Jersey's Princeton University, graduating with the highest honors and receiving his bachelor's degree in 1986, 2 years before D.E. Shaw & Co. had been founded. Bezos briefly worked for Fittel, a company which linked financial traders worldwide with financial organizations. After Fittel, Bezos took a job at Bankers Trust. It was 4 years after graduating that Bezos managed to land an interview with the relatively new company on Wall Street scene, D.E. Shaw and Company. The hedge fund, which Shaw had created, recruited its staff in a different manner than many of its competitors. Instead of hiring people to fit specific roles, Shaw's executives were hunting down those whom they saw as being the most intelligent and were then placing the successful candidate into the most appropriate position available. After interviewing Bezos, a partner of Shaw's told the boss that Jeff was likely to make someone a lot of money one day. David Shaw soon arranged to meet Bezos in person, and after their initial encounter, described him as having an unusual balance between intellect and creativity, finding the future Amazon boss to be friendly and enthusiastic. The world was on the cusp of epochal shift, and Jeff Bezos had found himself right at the place at the right opportune moment. Employed alongside Bezos at DE Shaw was Hale Z. Minor, who was also to go on to found one of the monopolizing internet sites of the future, the software download site CNET, otherwise known as download.com. While working together at DE Shaw, Minor and Bezos collaborated on a project to create a news by fax service, and although that eventually proved unsuccessful, the projects did lead to Bezos being made the youngest ever senior vice president at DE Shaw Hedge Fund. By 1990, he had even taken charge of the company. Bezos left DE Shaw in 1994 to found Amazon, and that same year he began building up the account for public consumption of how his supposed creation came to be. Indeed, Bezos changed his history, with many accounts of this era presenting him as selling used books out the back of a second-hand station wagon his family had helped him purchase. The mythos was created. Now, the Weekend Truth Festival begins tomorrow. If you would like to see all your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Chemerani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizia, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, that's tomorrow, the 4th, that's the next day, and the 5th, and that's the day after, of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need is to bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes, as food stalls, workshop, bushcraft, and amenities will all be provided on site. For more information and to find out where to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because it's happening tomorrow. So you better be quick. And for all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, then visit the What's On events calendar on the TNT website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, cuz here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past, and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, according to the Seattle Times, a whistleblower at Boeing supplier Spirit AeroSystems died Tuesday morning following a struggle with a sudden, fast-spreading infection. Uh-oh! Here with the story, join me now, is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Go on, tell us more about this fast-spreading infection, Ruckus.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe it'll be the next pandemic, Johnny. That remains to be seen. However, I think everyone's going to be safe as long as they are not a whistleblower who is accusing Boeing and Boeing-related companies of ignoring defects on their airplanes. In this particular instance, what we're discussing is a Boeing supplier. It's Spirit AeroSystems. This one whistleblower was accusing Spirit AeroSystems of ignoring manufacturing defects on the 737 MAX. And he has mysteriously, suddenly died just Tuesday, apparently. This is one former Spirit AeroSystems employee by the name of Joshua Dean. He was aged 45. He died after contracting a sudden illness. That's what the Seattle Times reported on Wednesday. Dean's aunt, Carol Parsons, told the outlet that Dean went to the hospital after he had trouble breathing about 2 weeks ago. Parsons said her nephew was intubated and his condition began to worsen. Dean developed pneumonia and MRSA, which is a very serious bacterial infection. That's according to the Seattle Times, that he caught pneumonia and MRSA. Joe Buccino, a spokesperson for Spirit AeroSystems, told the Seattle Times, quote, "Our thoughts are with Josh Dean's family. This sudden loss is stunning news here and for his loved ones," end quote. Dean happened to have testified against Spirit in a shareholder lawsuit last year, with the former quality auditor accusing the company of poor quality control in the production of Boeing's 737 MAX. The company's unorthodox engineering practices came under scrutiny after the New York Times reported in March that the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, had seen it use liquid Dawn soap to lubricate a 737 MAX door seal. Yikes. Spirit later said it tried using other household products such as Vaseline and cornstarch as lubricants before it settled on using the Dawn soap. According to the report from the New York Times, it told the outlet that Dawn soap was documented under the FAA's standards as a viable factory tool. Dean told the Wall Street Journal back in January that Spirit fired him for pointing out wrongly drilled holes in fuselages. Dean told the Journal, quote, "It is known at Spirit that if you make too much noise and cause too much trouble, you will be moved. It doesn't mean you completely disregard stuff, but they don't want you to find everything and write it up," end quote. Spirit told the Journal it disagreed with Dean's assertions, adding that it would defend itself in court. Dean's death comes just on the heels of the death of another similar kind of thing going on, a Boeing whistleblower, John Barnett, aged 62. Mr. Barnett died in March, in the middle of his deposition against Boeing. The Charleston County Coroner's Office told Business Insider in a statement that the former Boeing manager died from, quote, "what appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound," end quote. No further details were provided. Dean's lawyer, Brian Knowles, told the Seattle Times that he did not want to speculate about the timing and circumstances of Dean's death. Knowles also represented Barnett. Knowles said, quote, "whistleblowers are needed. They bring to light wrongdoing and corruption in the interests of society. It takes a lot of courage to stand up," end quote. I would imagine so. It probably also takes a lot of courage to have Brian Knowles represent you in these instances, because maybe that's the connecting factor, Johnny. What say you, my friend?
Wow, this is just one of those George Clooney movies of the future, isn't it? Amazing. Sad to hear that people have lost their lives, of course. A sudden, fast-spreading infection is a good reason not to question Boeing, though, isn't it? And also, gunshot wounds. I mean, we've seen a lot of those over the past few years of people who were potentially knew a little bit too much information, including Mark Middleton, who brought Epstein into the Clinton White House over the first 2 years 17 times and was found hanging from an extension cord with a shotgun wound to the chest, and it was called suicide. So, I mean, a lot of this is very suspicious. In actual fact, this theme is makes sense for the theme of today. The theme of today will... in the second half, especially, talk about death via planes, really, about people being hurt, damaged, being given infections via planes. Because, I mean, it's mixed up, isn't it? Even the Department of Defense, the Ministry of Defense, whichever country you live in, their defense apparatus are tied in with companies like Boeing and their subsidiaries. They have lots of things happening that you're not allowed to talk about, of course. And it's obviously a fantastic, if you were entering in as a mechanical engineer or something to do with planes and Boeing offers you a job, you're likely to swoop it up as quickly as possible, because of course it's one of the biggest and most reputable companies around. But unfortunately for these guys, this looks like something else completely. This looks like we can be conspiratorial about this, but of course we don't know too much information. But if this keeps happening, it suggests that there's something that is truly being hidden. There's something underneath the dirt that's already been dug up. There's something going on in the woodshed, you could say, at Boeing. Did it say anything about what caused this fast spreading infection, other than, you know, just he caught this and it got down? Did they posit any idea? Has anyone even wondered about that, Ruckus?
Doesn't look like it at this stage. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of investigations going on into this, probably more so from the armchair detectives and the internet than the people close to the actual case. Sadly, that usually happens. The thing is that, like, it makes sense that the underlying cause for why he was sent to the hospital is the big unknown, but it's quite clear what led to his death. I mean, this is a sad fact reality about going to hospitals these days. Usually when you go there, you get something a lot worse based on the procedures that they give you. I think everyone learned that during the pandemic. So this gentleman was intubated. That sounds familiar. Yeah. Anyway, he was having trouble breathing. Interesting. And then, yes, while he was in the hospital, probably from some dirty hospital equipment, somebody didn't know what the heck they were doing, he caught MRSA at a nasty infection and died. That stuff is nasty, nasty, scary stuff, Johnny. Real quick, Lord Melberry in the chat said something interesting. He said money comes before safety. And that's absolutely true. That's why, you know, they don't want whistleblowers, because the companies want to make money. But on to that same argument, people who work for these companies, also money comes before their ethics. A lot of these people, like you just said, they'll be happy to take the job at Boeing, sit down, shut up and do their job, collect their paycheck. So it takes a lot of guts for people to actually do these things when they become whistleblowers, and they are literally putting themselves, their lives on the line, Johnny.
Yeah, I get a feeling there's a mixture between guts and logic that they have to use. And unfortunately, that sort of combination in the right measure is missing from most people nowadays. And something else Lord Melbury, I noticed in the chat, said is there's nothing theoretical about a proven conspiracy. Good head on Lord Melbury. He better watch himself. He might find himself in the hospital very quickly with a sudden fast-spreading infection if he questions too much. Be careful. But that's the point, isn't it? We all feel like we have to be careful once we see someone else get it. So it's much less likely to see more whistleblowers coming out of Boeing anytime soon, I would assume. Thank you for that, Ruckus. Join me in the second half. I'm sure you'll hear about me talking about planes and how they're used for nefarious means, and this story will make even a little bit more sense in context. Anyway, thank you.
Can't wait.
Awesome. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
It's interesting. I mean, I just look at it as a creative tool as well, but I think it's going to end up eliminating a lot of those kind of jobs, because people are just going to be able to get, you know, add music easily. I mean, and so we as artists, you know, more than ever are going to have to sort of grind harder and harder, I think, or you know, sort of up level and implement AI tools into our own work. I'm not opposed to it. I mean, you can't really resist it. But as a filmmaker, I think it's more daunting.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on Today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Even the mighty might not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Whatever happened to good? It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and it's become our automatic answer to so much.
Hey, how's things?
Good.
Your mom, your weekend?
Good, good. Is good even that good anymore? At the Selbos, we believe good deserves better. Let's reclaim its true meaning. To us, good has always been about making a difference, and good never picks or chooses who it helps. Isn't it time we all remember what good really means?
You ever heard of a polyp? Sounds like a rare species of toad. Actually, it's a lump that grows inside me, your bowel. Look, I'm pretty sure if you had a strange lump growing on your forehead, you might get it looked at, right? But when they're growing inside me, nothing, nada. and the polyps I get can lead to Australia's second deadliest cancer. So, until there's a way to make them grow on your face, it's up to you to get me looked at. Got it?
Without CO2, the world stops breathing.
CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. My first guest is a very interesting man who describes himself as unabashedly and intelligently Christian. He believes in fire and brimstone in the holy nine yards and God's love in Jesus. Tim Bodner has an undergraduate degree in physics and maths. He was a combustion scientist, then a farmer, and did his seminary graduate education at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He preached in the pulpit of the Reformed Church for years, and he goes by the name Truth Slinger. He's currently finishing his a book right now on spiritual warfare, and I can't wait to speak to him. So, Truth Slinger, sir. Tim, how are you? Welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. How are you, Johnny?
I'm very good. How does one maintain their faith during such trying times?
Well, you know, actually, interestingly enough, I found that I've been a Christian for a little over 20 some odd years, and I found that my faith has grown more now in the last 6 months to a year than it's grown the entire previous 19 years. And that's because of all the things that I see coming together that are lining up in the world today, that literally the scripture is popping off of the pages of the Bible now. The world events that are going on around us makes it easy to see that something is happening and we're moving on to another era, we're moving on to another phase. And so that signals to me as a Christian that my Lord is coming back. So my faith is actually deepened. Things are more meaningful on a daily basis. Every choice that I make, every thought, I need to try and take captive to Christ. I don't live very much unintentionally. I'm very intentional about my faith these days. So it's very deep. We walk by faith rather than by sight as Christians. So
what you're saying there, it basically takes me on to the next question, because do you believe that the current situation in places like Israel has been prophesied?
Well, I do. And, you know, I want to, before I even start out talking about prophecy, this is never been my area of expertise. As a matter of fact, when I was preaching in the pulpit 20 years ago, and I preached about the return of Christ and the things that we see written in the Bible, in the back of my mind, I think I really never believed that I would see it in my lifetime, nor did anybody else that was in the church that I was preaching to really believe, because it's been so long. The Lord has tarried so long before he's come, since he's, you know, promised to come back. And so it's been generations and generations, and you've got people that are weary, and they say, well, you know, he said that he was going to come back, and people have been saying he's going to be coming back, you know, forever. And so I think that what happens is we've all been lulled to sleep. And now that world events really are beginning to transpire, that the church has been dead asleep for quite some time. But there does seem to be a spiritual awakening, I think, going on with all the activity around the world. You see a lot of people that are not normally being drawn to spiritual things, like you see Joe Rogan being drawn to spiritual things, and Jordan Peterson, and Russell Brand recently got baptized. I mean, just a lot of strange things that are going on that just indicate that I think people are really starting to turn to answers that are perhaps beyond what we really know and see, because everything's kind of going sideways if you really look at it. Seems to be. Wouldn't you agree with me?
Yeah, it's true enough. Everything is going sideways. And I can tell you that, you know, I in a sense left the church when I was 11 years old. I told my family I wasn't going to want to be attending church anymore. My whole family stopped attending church. I think it was the 80s was a time for, and the 90s was a time where everybody felt, you know,
downtrodden. Everybody was just in the motion, going through the motions, and you know, keeping right. their heads down. So it's kind of, for me, I've only been getting spiritual again over the past, I'd say, 10 years, probably over the past two years especially. I've been feeling it growing, but that kind of also comes from a personal aspect. You know, we all have our personal journeys, don't we?
Sure.
And we all get to a point where we decide on whether we're ready for the combat that comes. And
that's the important thing, I think, for me, is that, you know, there's a whole lot of question about how it's all going to come down in the end. And I started studying much more recently, heavily, because of the things that I saw, the things that I didn't pay attention to, as I alluded to 20 years ago. And as I started to look at this, I realized that this is a puzzle that is, there's so many different ways to look at it, possibilities of how this might happen because of the way scripture is just simply written. And these issues weren't very specific about exactly, you know, we might have a rapture, we might not. I believe May 19th is a significant date. I believe the eclipse we just had recently is something that is indicating that we need to be paying attention to something. They were trying to sacrifice the red heifer over in Israel. We've got the tensions with the Islamic world boiling over. So that entire area is a hotbed. So there's a whole lot of things going on. And I think the biggest thing that as I study all of this is that with the wars, rumors of wars, famines, all these things, that something is upon us and something is going to happen and a division is occurring between good and evil. And it's time to pick a side. And my job is to lift up Christ, to Jesus Christ, him crucified, as the bridge to us, between us and a high and holy God, which we can never reach up with our own works. And that's why Jesus did the work for us. And so, you know, that's not a popular message these days. I mean, my Twitter, I'm losing followers lately on Twitter. The harder I lean into the Christian message, it seems that the harder it is to get traction. But Jesus himself said in the end, you know, there's few and many. There's a broad road and there's a narrow way. And there are going to be a whole lot of people come as false prophets and spiritual leaders and things to say, I am the one that can lead you out of this. But there is only one way out of this mess. And I'm not sure, politically speaking, we can even vote our way out of this at this point. I mean, America is so far, it's an empire in decline. I mean, I'm not just looking at Bible stuff. I'm also looking at world models and the fourth turning and rise and falls of civilizations. Everything indicates that we're in a bad way right now and that it's going to get a whole lot worse.
Definitely. Well, let's just check the news quickly for a quick 30-second break to see if the apocalypse is upon us already. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Check this out.
Now,
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. State Department's deputy spokesman, Vedant Patel, stated that the International Criminal Court does not have jurisdiction over Israeli officials. This assertion followed reports suggesting potential ICC arrest warrants for Israeli leadership due to actions taken by the Israel Defense Forces in Gaza. The United States has been intensifying its scrutiny of Chinese researchers, particularly in the medical field, amid ongoing concerns over espionage and intellectual property theft attributed to the Chinese Communist Party.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Hello, I'm here with Tim Bodner. We're talking about religion, spirituality, what's going to happen in the future. But something you said there evoked a massive response in the chat, that's for sure. You were talking about people like these iconic icons of the modern time, people like Jordan B. Peterson, people like Russell Brand. A lot of people see them as deceivers, see them as the great deceivers, see them as the people who will you know, sell themselves as religious so they can sell. And this is a time where if we are coming up to end times, we can expect to see that more, I'm sure. So one of the questions I was going to ask you seems to make a lot more sense under that context. Can you tell me why so many righteous people, or seemingly righteous people today, are not religious?
Well, you know, that is an interesting distinction that your chat makes. And I think that to a certain degree, the answer is a bit multifaceted. One is the love of the men have grown cold. The love of the church has grown cold. It is the church at Laodicea. For all intents and purposes, it's not engaged with the culture. The reason we're in the mess that we're in today is because pastors, weak pastors, cowardice pastors that did not engage the political world and did not sink their teeth. I mean, if Christianity is not to be fleshed out, and I cannot preach to a congregation to say, this is what you need to do with your faith in response to this issue about abortion, or this issue about gay marriage, or whether we should be transing children. You know, I can address these things. We should be. We leave to Caesar what is Caesar's, but we render to God what is God's, right? And we were created in God's image, and the government has no business telling us how we should be sexual, how we should be raising our children, or any of that mess. And so, again, you know, why are righteous people? I think there's awakening going on. And I think that while we do need to be careful of deceivers and false prophets, the people that I see coming about aren't necessarily leading. They're coming more in a way of humility and saying, I don't know all the answers. And perhaps there is something, you know, outside of me. And Jordan Peterson has been approaching this Christianity thing. My God, I've never seen a more broken man regarding his sin in all my life. And he's just about this close to figuring it out. But yet his daughter is figuring it out and has figured it out and is further down the path. And I think we're all drawn, but I think we're being drawn hopefully to the same place. And but unfortunately, that isn't, you know, it's not like going up different sides of the mountain. We're all going to get to the same place. As long as the top of the mountain is Christ and Christ alone, then I agree. But nobody's getting to God through Islam. Nobody's getting to God through Judaism or any of the other religions. Mormonism, it's not happening because those are all works-based religions. The work's been done for us, provided in Christ, and the ones that figure that out. And we all come to that at different speeds. And Jordan Peterson, for example, seems to be coming at it through an intellectual, philosophical level, and in some cases, even a biochemistry level. But, you know, there is truth that's outside of the Bible, but we just need to compare, at least I do, from a worldview standpoint of, does it agree with the teachings of Christ in the Bible? Yes or no. If it doesn't, that's my worldview, and that's the way I separate out, and that's the way I treat everything and filter everything. And that's what they mean by take all things captive to Christ, all thoughts captive to Christ.
I think that if we had a conversation about Jordan B. Peterson, for the amount of work I've done on him, and I have watched all of his Bible lectures three times, all of his personality lectures, I know it inside and out, but I also know the man in many different ways. And research, and that could lead on to a good 20-minute to 40-minute conversation for sure. Looking across in a chat game, there's so much. I mean, these sort of conversations, of course, they evoke a massive response. Wee Fat Shook says, the creator didn't give us religion. He gave us a temple and an oasis to experience it. And there's a question for you from Dark Commission, who's asked, prophecy points to predestination. And if predestination is true, then what's the point of judgment?
Well, okay, the answer to that, the quick answer in the just a few minutes that we have left, is anybody that wants to understand this argument needs to go to Romans chapter 9, because Paul addresses this straw man a long time ago, right? He says, listen, if God is the orchestrator of all things, he's the quote-unquote puppet master, right? He's the one that raised Pharaoh and hardened his heart or did whatever he did. Then how can you still find fault, right? That makes perfect sense. If you're the one that orchestrates everything as God, how can you find fault? What does Paul say? Oh, yeah, you got me on that. No, he doesn't. He said, who are you, old man, to answer back to God? Well, the thing that is made said to the maker, why did you make me this way? listen, the mistake everybody makes is that we are created in the image of God. God is not a bigger us. Okay, we're a corrupted image of God. And when we render judgment upon God, that's when we're all going to go to, you know, essentially anybody that renders judgment upon God and doesn't agree with God and judgment upon us, those are the people that are going to hell. And it's as simple as that. When we agree with God about our own condition, we flee to Christ and we say we need his sacrifice because we realize how unholy we are. There's God who is infinitely separate from us, infinitely so, and only infinite blood of an infinitely divine Jesus Christ, his son, God in the flesh, could have done that for us to bridge that gap. That's it.
Tim, listen, you're going to have to come on again because the chat is full of questions. So I think we're going to have to do this again because a lot of people, you know, the right word is evoke. It evokes a massive amount of emotional content in people, a lot of logic and reasoning, and people have got to do their own math on this. And they've
I encourage you, you know, watch my podcast, follow me. It's at Truthslinger X on X, right? At Truthslinger X. And I do a daily show, a podcast, and I pin it to the top. And the highlights is where all my previous episodes are. So I go into this stuff in great detail, anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes a day. And I do this. I don't make any money off of it. I'm just a guy in the woods preaching my guts out because this is my pulpit.
Awesome. Right? Well, thank you for joining me today on the Johnny Vedmore Show. I really enjoyed that, and it flew by. So we definitely got to do it again.
Oh, it did. Thank you. Thank you, Johnny.
Pleasure, my friend. You're watching today's news talk on TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible. I'm dying.
I wasn't working. So I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments. You know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
Cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back, my friends. That was a very interesting first guest there, and it caused a lot of chat there. Amazing. My next guest, though, on the Johnny Vedmore Show, I've spoken to before a couple of years ago. Victoria Collette Jones is the founder of satoshispage.com. She's the author of an award-winning book, of course, Truth Decay, How Bitcoin Fixes This. And she is also a dentist. So quick, hide all your teeth quickly. Her stated mission is to introduce Bitcoin to individuals and the independent business community, helping them to understand what Bitcoin is and how to help sustain them in their businesses in turbulent economic times and support individuals and business owners in management of their wealth portfolio. You can find her on X at Victoria Dentist. Victoria, welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show. It's a pleasure to speak with you again.
Oh, likewise. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's lovely to see you again.
Well, for a lot of people, I did have a podcast before the NewsPace podcast, which was called the Fungi Monkey podcast. And you were one of my last guests on the Fungi Monkey podcast before I rebranded it. We had a great conversation. You were really really well thought out. You've got a lot of knowledge. And I think I want to bring people some of the information as well that I think that they're missing and they probably haven't seen my early podcast. So it's worth hearing your story as well. Can you tell people about what made you go from a full-time dentist to a Bitcoin pioneer?
Yes. Well, I mean, I was, as you say, I was a dentist for 20 years. I'm not actually a dentist now. I was never particularly happy as a dentist, but I didn't really know what to do instead. And so really it was the story of setting up my own dental practice just after the financial crisis that taught me a lot about what happens in the real world in finance. I mean, just prior to that, I'd studied for an MBA at Nottingham University. And even though they'd taught me how, you know, big corporations need an entire finance department in order to manage the company's wealth, which again was a new level of knowledge, you know, understanding how the world's financial system worked was a whole new level of understanding. And, you know, I hadn't been introduced to that then. And so in the process of setting up my own little business, kind of building on from what I'd learned already, you know, I then had to deal with the financial crisis 9 months into starting my own business with, you know, limited savings. Never really had to struggle with money being a dentist, but, you know, 9 months in, having run out of my own savings to start my own business, no bank on the planet was prepared to lend money to anybody. And so after a great deal of struggle, I managed to get beyond that. And then after, you know, I got to a stage where I finally had a stable platform, I really wanted to understand what had happened. And so that was the point at which I started doing a deep dive into what was actually happening in the real economy. And in the real economy. And in addition to that, you know, some of the dramas I experienced in terms of actually running my own business. I mean, a lot of people go into a normal business and they'll pay with a card and they have no idea what happens to that money afterwards. Most, I guess, would assume that that money goes straight to the business owner, but it doesn't actually. It has to go, normally has to go through a payment provider. And the payment provider will take a small fee of each payment that's made. And, you know, after a few years of running my business, I had a business coach who, you know, in the process of, you know, demonstrating other various things about business finance, was able to point out that actually that tiny proportion off the top line has a disproportionate effect on your profits, which sounds like a bit of a head bender to get your head around. But what it really means is, you know, normally you'd take the costs off your revenue and then you'd calculate the profits. And even though, you know, that cost still gets incorporated when you're filing your taxes, it has a, makes a disproportionate business when it's coming off the top line. My dad has a saying, which is revenue is vanity, profit is sanity. And so, you know, when you've got a cost that's a direct proportion of your top line, it makes a big difference. And one of the other problems I used to have as a dentist, I'd be in the middle of a really complicated procedure and my nurse would come in and say, you know, the card machine's broken down. And of course, at that stage, I was running a small little business. So I was in no position to kind of drop everything that I was doing and then go and sort out the card machine. And so, you know, this and a number of other stories that I could tell you just made me realize, I was just like, it doesn't matter how good I am as a dentist. My business is completely dependent on the services that are provided by these banks. And if anything ever happens to these banks, you know, my business is over. And then once you start going down that line of thinking, you hear about stories of dentists in Venezuela who ended up literally having to give up their businesses because in a situation of hyperinflation, very high value businesses tend to be the first ones to suffer because they can't charge enough to support the costs that they're having to pay on the back end. And so all of these things just taught me, you know, when I realized how vulnerable the financial system was, how, you know, other countries had ended up in hyperinflation, how the West was headed in that direction, it made me realize that, you know, I need to understand this. And I think there's also value in telling anyone else who's prepared to know. And also, I think there's also a danger in just focusing on the problems in these situations. I didn't just want to understand the problem. I was just like, okay, well, this is a problem. What's the solution? And so, of course, you know, you start looking into the financial system, and a lot of people talk about gold and silver. But having been a business owner, I was just like, there's no way I'm going to start accepting gold and silver coins in my business. You know, it's hard enough to get to the bank in order to deposit cash, forget, you know, and then verifying that the gold and silver is real. And actually, if you go back in financial history, when they were using gold and silver to exchange money, there were lots of issues with metals being debased. That was often how countries went into hyperinflation in ancient times. So I was like, well, you know, we need something for the digital age. And I'd heard about Bitcoin, but I'd never really investigated it. But it was just like the next logical step, because I was like, well, what's the digital thing? And when I explored Bitcoin and I realized that the software had been programmed to mimic the economic properties of gold, I was like, that's it. That's the solution. And so that's when it. I started, you know, doing it. I really want, if before I was going to recommend it to anyone else, I really wanted to make sure that I'd studied it and understood it myself. So I started going to Bitcoin conferences, and I've got a number of friends in the space now. And after about, and I think I also sold my business because I was going home from work and I wasn't interested in studying anything to do with dentistry. All I wanted to do was learn about this Bitcoin stuff. So I was just like, okay, this is clearly a sign and something I'd rather, you know, invest my energy in. So I took a year off and, you know, went to these conferences. And then after a year, I was just like, well, what do I do now? And I thought, well, I spent all this time gathering this knowledge. And at the time, in 2019, there weren't that many books on Bitcoin. There are quite a few now, but at the time there wasn't. So I was just like, okay, I'll put together what I know into a book, because I'd go to conferences and I'd come across people who understood how the software worked, but they didn't necessarily understand the financial aspect, or there'd be people who understood the financial aspect but didn't really have much faith in how the computer software worked. And so it just felt like there was an opportunity there to kind of bring the two together. And so by telling my story of how I became interested in Bitcoin, you know, that gave me an opportunity to highlight the problems and demonstrate why Bitcoin was the solution.
There's a lot of people in the chat who have their own experiences of this sort of stuff. Little Carol says, never trust a bank with your money. That's probably a very good advice nowadays. And Photon says, you can always mine more gold. We all know that's a little bit difficult. English Exit says, the real problem is usury in central banks. And that is very much true. And going on to talking about that, as we start to hear terms like CBDCs and Finternet coming into common usage, do you find that many late adopters to Bitcoin are eager to invest in the digital alternatives to what the state will eventually offer?
I think there's a lot of confusion. Again, you know, because it takes quite a while to understand what Bitcoin is all about, a lot of people jump into Bitcoin and then their next leap, you know, they think they found this new thing, but it must be an old thing and someone's going to invent something better. And so that's when a lot of people investigate the altcoin space. And in many respects, it appears to be part of the journey. It's almost like you have to explore that space before you realize why Bitcoin, you know, is the main one, really. So yes, I would say there are a lot of people who are interested in it. A lot depends on your motivation, because there are a lot of avenues that you can actually approach Bitcoin from. You know, some people are interested in the tech, some people are interested in the finance, some people are just interested in trading. So a lot depends on your motivation, really. If you're just interested in trading, there's still mileage to be had in some of the altcoins. If you're just interested in the technology, you can go down some of those rabbit holes. But essentially, when you bring the elements of the problem together, it's just been so masterfully put together with Bitcoin. And what a lot of people don't understand is that, you know, a lot of the elements that went into Bitcoin had been developed over a long period of time. You know, they'd been in development since the 90s. All Bitcoin did was just kind of bring all of those elements together in such a way that it couldn't be shut down. I mean, just before Bitcoin was invented, there was a technology called BitGold, where someone was actually using a website where people could access tokens that was equivalent to the value of gold. But the thing is, because it was organized by a company, the US government was able to come in and shut it down. So I think when Bitcoin was invented, you know, they were aware, the creator of Bitcoin, we still don't know exactly who they are, but I think they were aware of this story. And so they actually made a point of keeping themselves secret, and they designed a system that would ultimately govern itself. And after about 3 years after getting it started and gathering the people together who would get it started, he then disappeared and no one's heard of the person who invented it since 2011.
So talking about that, of course, one of the benefits of Bitcoin is all transactions are recorded on a ledger, yet you can still have a certain amount of anonymity. Do you see a push happening to link people's Bitcoin transactions to their digital identities?
Well, it's funny you should say that, actually, because Michael Saylor, who really took an interest in Bitcoin in 2020, he's a billionaire businessman over in the United States. Just today, I've seen a tweet where he was mentioning that they now want to do email IDs on the Bitcoin blockchain. And I'm like, what? What are you doing? Privacy is definitely an issue, and it's something that people should rightly be concerned about, you know. And the way I tend to talk about it in the Bitcoin community is that at the moment we've got a situation where the governments want to do everything that they do in secret, but they want everyone to be transparent. But of course, in that situation, you've got the centralized entity that becomes very powerful and the individual is very vulnerable. And so what we want Bitcoin to do is turn that on its head. We want the big entities to be transparent. We want the transactions on the blockchain to be obvious. We want to see what the countries are doing and negotiating with each other and, you know, where the flow of our tax dollars is going. You know, if you're going to, you know, charge us money through tax, then, you know, give us some transparency in how you're spending that money, you know, rather than just it just going into this black hole. But by the same token, it's important that individuals have privacy because it's the individuals that are vulnerable. So, you know, refugees, for example, that are trying to lose a dictation, often in those situations, they'd try and cross the border. And if they had any gold on them, it would automatically be confiscated. Whereas with Bitcoin, you can cross the border just with 12 words in your head. And, you know, you can acquire a device once you get to the new country. And as long as you've got those words, you can download your wealth. And so in those situations, it's a remarkable technology. But of course, if someone like MicroStrategy comes along and wants to put everyone's ID on a Bitcoin blockchain, you know, the moment you've got anything that's linked to your name on the blockchain, it's possible for people to track it. It might not be easy, but it is possible. Some of the second layer technologies are designed specifically to try and preserve some of that privacy, again, using that same philosophy. But certainly, you know, if Michael Saylor now has over 200,000 Bitcoins, he's got a big slice of the pie in that respect. And someone who's going to use their resources and their power for something like that immediately rings alarm bells. I think everyone should be concerned about that.
Agreed. Lots of alarm bells to be rung once these guys get involved in the systems that we want to create as alternative systems, of course. I'm sure you've heard about the indictment of the so-called Bitcoin Jesus, Roger Ver, recently for not paying capital gains tax on hundreds of millions of dollars he made on Bitcoin. What do you make of that case?
Well, I think that's arisen because he finally wanted to surrender his US citizenship. And the way it works in US law is that when you surrender your citizenship, they then take a value of your assets. I think a lot of countries do this. I think if you wanted to say that you were leaving Britain permanently, you'd still have to make an agreement with the tax authorities. They'd want to make sure that you had paid the tax that you generated whilst you were their citizen before you then moved to another country. And often countries have agreements with other countries to make sure that people aren't avoiding it so much. So it's a peculiarity of the US system. I don't think any other country, I mean, I don't think Roger Ver has been living inside the US for a number of years now, but the US is peculiar in the fact that they require that their citizens continue paying tax wherever they are in the world. So he's kind of a victim of the system that he grew up in. And so, yeah, surrendering his citizenship has basically created this issue with his tax bill. And of course, you know, Roger Ver was very enthusiastic about Bitcoin right from the early days. He acquired a lot of Bitcoin. He created a lot of controversy when there was a big debate in 2017 over how they were going to develop the technology. He wasn't in agreement with how it was going to work. He'd acquired a lot of Bitcoin by then, and so he was quite a powerful voice. And he wanted the technology to develop in a different way. He didn't get his way because the community voted to take it in a different direction. And so he took the people who were supporting him and created a different kind of Bitcoin called Bitcoin Cash. That's where Bitcoin Cash came from. So he was very much a leader and a proponent of that. And so, you know, with with all of that, he will have acquired quite substantial wealth. And of course, you know, it's if it was a small individual with not much, you know, revenue, there probably wouldn't be much point in chasing him. But because he's so wealthy, it's just like, right, time to make an example of you. So I feel a bit sorry for him, really.
I think a lot of people feel the same about that case. Listen, we've got just about 30 seconds, a little bit over. Mm-hmm. What are the pitfalls of trading crypto? I know that's a lot to ask for a 30-second answer, but I know there's loads of benefits. But what should people be wary of?
It's very volatile. Yeah, it's very volatile. It used to be the case that Bitcoin had quite a defined pattern, but now that they've introduced exchange-traded funds, it's bringing loads of resources in its wake, which has its advantages to the upside, but also its disadvantages to the downside. So you need to be really careful. You need to know what you're doing.
For sure. And you know what you're doing, don't you? So where can people find you again?
I'm on satoshispage.com. My book is Truth Decay, How Bitcoin Fixes This, available on Amazon. And my book's available on my website, and I have regular newsletters that you can sign up for to let you know when the latest one's been published.
Awesome. Victoria Collette Jones, you are nothing but a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Anytime. Right then, look at that. Ah, I'm glad that those two joined me, because that's a lot of conversation to be had. And my next hour has a bit of a theme attached to it. So thanks for sticking with me on the Johnny Vedmore Show. And the chat is really super busy. Loads of questions. I know that won't stop. So go to the tntradio.live, get in the chat, ask a question or two to my next guest. We are going for a deep dive again when we return to today's News Talk TNT.